So we've been asking for big ideas, and we've gotten some, but let's stipulate for the record, this may be a radical idea, but it's not necessarily a big idea for fixing the economy.
This is Richard from Westchester. My suggestion is, unfortunately, to legalize marijuana and tax it appropriately.
Kind of wonder why he used the word unfortunately there, but maybe we'll get him on the line and ask. But you might remember in 2009, even the president got this suggestion during an online town hall meeting.
I don't know what this says about the online audience, but the answer is no. I don't think that is a good strategy to grow our economy. So, all right.
Radical idea, let's agree on that. Small idea, let's find out how small. And it got us to thinking about a bigger idea, and that's why we asked Jeffrey Miron to join us. He's a Harvard economist and a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, which is a libertarian think tank. He joins us from Wellesley, Massachusetts. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning.
So, all right, let's just say we legalize pot tomorrow. In terms of savings in law enforcement and taxable revenue, what's available to do that tomorrow?
Well, from my estimates, which of course are somewhat uncertain because it's an underground economy, it's a little bit hard to measure, but roughly $15 to $20 billion a year. That's across all levels of government, state, local, and federal.
And Jeffrey Miron has studied this for a paper that he published last September called The Budgetary Impact of Ending Drug Prohibition. Now, you know, that's not a lot of money given $14.2 trillion of federal deficit. And a reduction of $8 billion is really a drop in the bucket. But it got us to thinking about something that might be a big idea. Could legalization of marijuana possibly be a template or a model for opening all kinds of aspects of the so-called black economy to federal taxation, removal of all sorts of prohibitions? Think about that for a moment.
Well, that certainly, you know, is one step toward a number of others that, in my view, would make sense. For example, you could legalize prostitution. Again, however, it turns out that the budgetary benefit that we would get from that would be fairly modest because a very large fraction of that market has found a way to be sort of quasi-legal. It's showing up as escort services, as massage parlors, as things like that. So the amount of purely underground activity that could be taxed if you went to full legalization of prostitution is pretty small. It wouldn't add up to anything more than a very minor difference in the budgetary situation.
But is there a way you could structure transactions so that there would be no under-the-table possibility that virtually any kind of cash transaction would show up as income and would therefore be open to taxation, and that would open a broad part of the economy suddenly to federal taxation?
Oh, absolutely. There's still further step. There are many transactions which are not reported legally to avoid taxes. So if we had lower tax rates, if there were fewer, say, permits and fees to set up some sort of a hairstyling parlor, then some of that would be explicitly legal. So there is a fair bit of gray market activity. In many cases, legal things that are just being done in a way that avoids taxes. So then that would start to get you some more substantial amounts of money. So the farther you go, the more you can get, absolutely.
We should note before we go that countries around the world have serious problems with dealing with the black market or gray market. And in some countries, there's really no way you can have an income tax because people just spend all of their time in the unreported gray economy. How do countries change and move back to a system where revenue is taxable? And why does it work in the United States, Jeffrey Miron?
Well, I think it works in some countries much better than others, partially because they have the infrastructure in terms of electronic monitoring of all sorts of transactions, so there are records. They have a history of people having sort of been in compliance and paying taxes, a culture that goes along with that. Okay, they don't have these extreme regulations which force a lot of people underground and so on. For poorer countries, developing economies, they're in a tougher position. It's just much harder to monitor, to collect taxes, to figure out who there is that should be paying taxes. And then in many cases, they also have all this regulation that provides a strong incentive to stay underground. So it's a combination of those things that's necessary to get a better yield of tax revenues.
So maybe it's a more strategic approach to looking at the economy and how it actually works as opposed to simply talking about loopholes, which you hear all the time in Washington. Before we go, Jeffrey, what would be the most radical thing you would legalize? Perennially, we hear that legalizing marijuana is something that people online or who call this program or call any program would love to have happen. You've studied it a lot. But what would you legalize tomorrow as a libertarian?
Well, I would legalize basically all vice. I would legalize prostitution. I would legalize all drugs, cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, and so on. The total tax revenue from legalizing all drugs, again, is not really a solution to the budget problem, but it's more substantial. The net benefit might be $80, $90 billion. That's not totally trivial, although, again, it's not really going to affect the overall problem that we're facing. Gambling at this point in the U.S., the other major vice, is pretty much legal. In fact, state governments are operating all sorts of gambling activities, so there's not much additional revenue to be gained there. But all drugs and all sorts of consensual adult sexual activities, those should all be legal.
An $80 billion, at least according to his estimate, radical idea. Jeffrey Miron is a Harvard economist and a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, a libertarian think tank, going beyond legalizing marijuana as a way of getting more federal tax revenue. Jeffrey, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
And we want to end the hour with your responses to this idea about how to solve the economic problem, responses that you put in the words or at least the style of Dr. Seuss.
These were specifically from the time that Dr. Seuss was becoming the Dr. Seuss that we know.
That's dentist Charles Cohen talking about a collection of rarely seen Dr. Seuss stories that will soon be published by Random House this fall, and that inspired many of you to take on the economy a la Theodore Geisel.
My name is Diane, and I'm calling from Detroit. The best story that Dr. Seuss wrote, and this was before he was Dr. Seuss, he went by Theo LeSieg Geisel backwards. And he wrote this book called Come Over to My House, Come Over and Play. And for the life of me, I don't understand why it's out of print. Come Over to My House is just a great book about all these different places, like in Japan we sleep on the floor, come over to my house, I hope you don't snore. And the end of the book it says, wherever you go, you will hear people say, come over to my house, come over and play. It's a fabulous book. I hope they put it back in print.
Our producers did check on that, Diane, and you can find used copies of that book online if you want to get another copy.
Come Over to My House. Oh, mm-hmm. They're great titles. And Dr. Seuss, you know, he's a literary legend, but in fact, he's a rapper.
This is Bill from Miami. If you read Dr. Seuss's works, his later works in particular, it rhymes in the same meter and rhythm as if you were rapping it. It is the precursor to rap and hip-hop. And so, therefore, this is a man that was way ahead of his time.
Word, Seuss. Listener calling 877-8-MY-TAKE.
But we want to leave you with this one. It's one of the best responses we got, a poem about the economy written by listener Paul in Augusta, Georgia, inspired by Dr. Seuss, read by Terrence McKnight from our sister station, WQXR.
The Detolopolis Tree. It's not very pretty, and we try not to see. The tree in the garden, the Detolopolis tree. We feed it by day, we feed it by night, and then we're surprised when it grows to such height. We look at the leaves, they're red, they're not green. When we eat its fruit, it tastes like a lean. Oh no, it's not new, and it's really not rare. The truth of the matter, it grows everywhere. It grows in our yards and across the round globe. We know how to stop it, but it hurts the frontal lobe. So for now, we just blame the ones who write checks. For to blame ourselves is far too complex.
Oh, that is fantastic. Seuss inspired poem written by a listener, Paul Hick. I bet a lot of people want from Terrence's voice. It would sound strange coming out of my face, but it is a great voice. Listener Paul Hickey wrote that from Augusta, Georgia. Read, of course, by Terrence McKnight on our sister station, WQXR. You can read that classic and voice it yourself at thetakeaway.org or give us your submissions as well. 8778 My Take. I'm Celeste Headley.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.